So first, Rob insisted that I make sure that I tell you guys that I am not a sales guy. So I'm actually in charge of product at Silicon Expert now. Came from Northrop Grumman. I spent 18 years there. Started in IT, and then the last 8 years was doing obsolescence management, spares and repairs, and all the cool product support stuff. So I have a little bit of experience doing this kind of stuff. So first of all, how many people in the audience are component engineers? Raise your hand. Okay, I just want to get a good look at all the people that are going to hate me by the time I'm done. So we're going to talk about the problem here is we focus so much on the tools. We focus so much on the process. We focus so much on the problems that we're having with our supply chain. We ignore the people that are actually doing the job. Do we have the right people in the right places? Do we have the right mixes in our teams? And are we taking care of those people to ensure that they are around to help us solve these issues that we have every day? So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to go through some of these things of what are the right mixes for the right teams, for the right projects. How do you get these people to communicate? Making sure that those people have the information they need to do their job, kind of important. Making sure they're trained. And at the end, we're going to talk a little bit about personnel obsolescence, something we don't talk about. So first of all, what's your statement of work? A lot of DoD people in here. I know that a lot of OEMs are subbing everything out. That's what we did at Northrop. I had very little actual electronic design going on. I know that sometimes when you're kind of a mid-tier or a subcontractor to an OEM, what you're going to have is you're going to have a mix. You're still doing a lot of contract management with an OEM, but you have designers that are doing actual design and you own some design. And then a lot of contract manufacturers, that's all you do is working with the components at the component level, right? So we're going to talk about the different pieces of this and why teams should be different in these different scenarios. So first, we're going to start with the OEMs. And this is where it's going to probably upset some people. Engineers, component engineers, do not belong talking to customers. Sorry. It's just like the old, if you've seen Office Space, right? What exactly do you do? Well, I'm a people person, right? I talk to the software engineers, and then I talk to the customers, and I relay the information. Well, why can't the software engineers just talk to the people? You can't let a software engineer talk to the customer, right? It's the same thing. Why? Well, there's a reason for it. Because 90% of the work that's really being done when you're managing a subcontractor is dealing with statements of work, making sure that the documents that they're giving you are the correct documents at the correct time, that the data is accurate, and then having arguments with your contact on the supplier side about why they didn't give you what was supposed to be in the document, why their data doesn't match what your data is, because if you're doing what you should be doing at the OEM level, you're looking at your bill of materials well, and you're making sure that you know what's end of life and coming end of life, and that your supplier or subcontractor is doing the same thing. So really the best people for this job are people with supplier contract management experience. And I can tell you this from experience in managing a team like this. I put people that were more technical engineers in those roles, and it didn't work, because they were having discussions at such a technical engineering level with these subcontracts people on the other side, and they're contracts people. They're like, okay, great, I am so happy that you're telling me that this FPGA is going obsolete. That's great. What does that have to do with the document that I just delivered on behalf of our engineering? Right? They don't speak the language. Are there times we need to get them involved? Absolutely. But that's typically a secondary conversation after you've gotten through the, hey, this document wasn't delivered on time, it's not in the right format, all that stuff. We've got some issues with the data integrity. That's where the point, can we get a meeting with our engineering and your engineering? But they should not be handling that every day. You also do not want to pay a component engineer $150 an hour or whatever you're paying your component engineers once you get in your fully burdened rates to look at documents, to look at PCNs, to do all this work that somebody else could be doing at a lot lower rate. So what about if you're in the middle? Now you need a mixed team. You need component engineers dealing with the component engineering, but you still need somebody who can talk to your prime and be able to have that relationship with them and be able to speak the legalese, because that's what you're going to be talking. So having a mixed team is dreadfully important in something like this, because you need the expertise and you need to have them right there in those meetings to be able to answer those questions. But you still need to have somebody that understands a relationship and statements of work and all that. So it's more of a mix, right? And what about if you're pretty much strictly a CM or somebody that all you deal with is electronic components? Well, that's where component engineers are probably the ones leading your obsolescence. Those are the people that you're gonna really rely on. And it makes more sense to have them more involved in even some of the more menial tasks of going through PCNs, seeing if they're valid, seeing if it impacts you, right? So how do we get communication? First thing we need is to make sure that everybody knows that we're around, right? When I first started on the last program I was on at Northrop, one of the first things I did was got together with all of the subcontracts people and procurement and had a big meeting and introduced them to the DMSMS team. And we started talking about stuff and had a younger girl raise her hand and said, "We have a team that does this? Yeah, we've been doing this in this company for 10 years now. Oh, I thought procurement did that when they couldn't buy someone." So, you know, yeah, she was younger, newer, but still, I mean, that just goes to show, even though very robust program, known in the industry for one of the more robust programs, and people in the own company didn't even know about it. Make sure that people know who does what. A lot of times people don't know that. So make sure that your teams know, okay, this is your job, this is their job, here's who you go to when you need that information. Right, making sure you have that cross-pollinization. Community practice is a great way. We started one at Northrop, got all the different obsolescence people from all the different programs together, had a monthly meeting. That's where we talked about our issues that we were having, shared problems, came up with our best practices, came up with our process, came up with what we needed to do to update our tools. Right, great way to get communication going. And the last thing, which you will never see happen but needs to start happening, is reward people who work on these larger obsolescence issues and save the company $1 billion. Show them that, hey, what you did matters more than just, you know, go away until the next problem happens, right? Because that cost avoidance would have been a big hit to the company. So they should get rewarded for going above and beyond, because they could just sit there and kind of do their job, and maybe they resolved it in a way that worked, but maybe because they went above and beyond, they were able to avoid the cost in a larger way or something. Okay, so making sure you have the right data at the right time. If people don't have access to the data, they can't do their job. It is becoming increasingly apparent that designers are getting blamed for obsolescence. And designers are coming up to me at almost every conference saying, "Hey, I'm getting blamed for obsolescence. I don't want to have obsolescence in my design, but I have no idea where to get the data, how to avoid this, right? So make sure that your designers have access to it. Make sure that they know, hey, I'm putting together this bill of material. Before I can release this drawing, it has to be checked. It has to be clean. No, not recommended for new designs in here. Now, one way that you can do that, we talked about a little bit yesterday in the sessions and in the brief out, is having a approved component list, approved manufacturer list, and keeping that clean, and then enforcing that you have to use that to be able to do new design. Because now you have a way of making it easier for those designers to choose good parts. Otherwise, they're going to pick the part they used last time. It's what I'm used to. It worked last time, I'm going to use it this time. They don't go to see if it's obsolete already, going obsolete, counterfeit, compliant, any of those things, right? And we're working to try to make sure we can get data in the tools. So integration, data integration. Make sure the data is there that people need right where in the tools they work, so they don't have to go out and get it somewhere else. Okay, training. Let's make sure that these people are actually set up for success. So if you're running an obsolescence team, what are you doing? Are you giving them the time to do training? To go do DAU? To go to the DMSMS conference? To come to FOM? Are you encouraging them to do webinars? There's plenty out there. We do them. I know, you know, Rob's done some great ones. There's other companies out there doing them. There's DoD-based ones. So are you encouraging them to do that? Or are you telling your team that it is important for them to keep learning and staying on top of these topics? Obviously, the people that are here are engaged, but is that through your whole team? If you're a leader of a team, what are you doing for your team? Are you the one person from your team that gets to go? If so, go back and tell your manager, hey, this is important stuff. Everybody on the team needs to be at these things and learning, because what we invest in the people is going to help our overall program. And again, collaborating. Set up a community practice. Work with other programs. Work with other projects. Work with people within the company and outside the company. That's why events like this are great, the networking. Because you get to hear different ideas and different philosophies on the things that you should be doing to help your obsolescence. So invest that time. All right, personnel obsolescence. So right now in the U.S., even though we had some talks earlier about we're probably going to have a recession and everything else, right now in the U.S., we actually have a deficit of workers. Unemployment is at a historic low. Where are you going to get the talent? Because it's just not out there. Younger kids coming out of school are being told that the way to get ahead in this world these days is to switch jobs every 3 to 5 years. There's no loyalty anymore, both on the company side and on the employee side. Part of why I stayed at Northrop for 18 years was I had a pension. My whole family had worked there. You know, it was just, it was home. Kids starting there today, they don't get a pension. They have no reason to stay. Harris is offering them $30,000 or more a year as soon as they get their clearance. Guess what they're doing? As soon as they get their clearance, takes a year, another couple months to get a special access program, access, they're bailing. So now Northrop spent all this time bringing the people in, getting them their clearance, waiting for them to actually be able to do their real job, and they're bailing and going to another company just for more money. And thinking that they're going to do the same thing, because then they're going to go over to Lockheed, and then they're going to go back to Northrop, and each time they're going to get a $30,000 bump in pay. So if we're not planning for that today, then you're in trouble. And so what are we doing? Most important, tacit knowledge. When you've got older people that are working in the company who've been doing the obsolescence management for 10 years, making sure that they stick around long enough so that they can transfer that knowledge over to the new people coming in. Because this isn't something you learn in school. This is a learn as you go, trial by fire kind of role. So how are you making sure that that knowledge is getting passed on? How are you making sure that you have record of what you've been doing so that new person comes in and can go back and say, oh, we had this issue with this same part on another program, you know, last year before I got here. Here's what they did. Okay, well, I probably need to look at doing something similar. An amazing thing here is there is this crazy notion that some people don't think obsolescence management is fun. I don't get that, personally. That's kind of what I live for. I think it's awesome. It's great that we have something so cool that we get to do. Yeah, it's painful. It hurts sometimes. You're banging your head up against the wall trying to find a solution. But there is truly something rewarding about it. And you will find those in your organizations that have a passion for it because they realize how important it is and realize the impact it can make to a program. So take care of those people. And have those people be your leaders and have them teaching the other people and hopefully instilling some of that same passion into them about how important this stuff is. That's probably one of the bigger things too. This is important. This is critical. Obsolescence managers get ignored until there's a problem. But if you think about the impact obsolescence could have, especially on a larger military program, high rel, medical, that impact is huge to the company. So having the right people is important. Keeping those people is important. And making sure that you're passing on and sharing that knowledge is critical. You don't want to lose that knowledge because somebody walks out the door. So, we really have to make sure when there's a reason, right, that when you see it listed anywhere, it's listed as people, process, and tools. It's not process first. It's not tools first. It's always people. You can have the best process in the world. You can have the best tools in the world. And most of you do because you use my tools. But without the people, where are you? And if you're bringing in new grads every week and trying to teach them how to do obsolescence, what's really the learning curve there? Right? It's going to be tough. And then the community. We have a good community. We need to keep building that community. There is no reason why we shouldn't need twice the ballroom size for this. We should be having to get a stadium at some point. I know that's Rob's vision, is Wembley, right? But seriously, we should, the community needs to grow, the community needs to work together, because if we don't do it, nobody's going to do it for us. It's not like the other industries. So we've got to work together. We've got to build this community up. We've got to share these ideas. We've got to make sure that everybody's following best practice. That's the only way we're going to be successful. So, real quick before questions, we have a short commercial break.
Are you lost in a sea of parts management red tape? Are you navigating the supply chain sea surrounded by hazards and risks that could sink you? You need a way to get through these hazards. You need Silicon Expert GPS. Silicon Expert's guided, proven solutions give you the tools and solutions you need to enable your team to successfully navigate the journey that is the parts management process. From the design process at the beginning of your product's existence to the end of its long journey, The experience and knowledge of Silicon Expert Engineers will be your seasoned crew. The tools and solutions of Silicon Expert Connect GPS ensure a risk-free navigation through obsolescence management, compliance management, resource constraints, supplier and component verifications, cost management and efficiencies, product design, supply chain continuity, market availability, pricing, and lead time. Up-to-the-minute, real-time, concise data that is perfectly integrated into your product's entire life cycle will lead you to a successful parts management process. Contact your local Silicon Expert representative at sales@siliconexpert.com to learn more about proper BOM grading with Silicon Expert GPS.
So I wanted to show that to you guys because I came up with the concept. So I thought it was cool, but it also does show how it's important to navigate through all these things, and together we can be that safe harbor, right? That's what we're here for. Thank you.
All righty, give it up for Vern. Here we go to our first, I'm going to take it one more further, right?
Yep.
All right, our first question is, what are the best methods used to predict the life cycle of various components? A total softball for you.
Yes. So first of all, I mean, yeah, we have algorithms that are based on Dr. Sanborn's original algorithms. So that helps. PCNs, make sure you're keeping watch of the PCNs. Look at the other trends. You know, it's almost preaching to the choir. You guys know this stuff, right? Make sure you have data. Make sure you have good data. Make sure you have timely data. It's got to be accurate. And then double check. You know, as we said in one of the things yesterday, trust but verify. So make sure that you're keeping a pulse on this. Make sure that you have your parts loaded. And make sure that you're watching for these things that are happening in the marketplace.
Dennis, we do a good job with that? Do I hear yep? All righty. Next question. There's some concern that company acquisitions and mergers have reduced the number of manufacturers for some parts categories, and this can increase risks due to sole source obsolescence. How have company acquisitions and mergers affected DMSMS? That's from Brad at Elbit.
It's the leading cause. It is the leading cause, and it's growing every day. From 2017 to 2018, it's more than doubled. 43% of products went obsolete without a single PCN coming out. So no chance for last time buy. No warning. Just gone. The first thing on day one when an acquisition happens is they sit down and they say, okay, here's the line that you've got. Here's the line that I've got. Which one's the most profitable? And they're cutting the one that's not profitable. And guess what? The one that's the most profitable may not be the one that most users are using. So you can't go by that. Oh, everybody's using this part. They're never going to cut it. Well, if everybody's using the part, but they're only making a penny per part, less people are using this one, and they're making, you know, a dollar a part on it, guess which one they're going to cut? And thinking that, well, when I obsolete this one, everybody's going to have to move over here anyway. Now everybody's going to be buying that part. So it is critical to watch these mergers and acquisitions, and that's one of the things we look at for predicting the end of life is, you know, what's going on in an M&A market, and as was stated earlier, chances are it's probably going to pick back up again.
All righty, great answer to that. Let's go out to the audience. I'm sure there's questions right over here. Speaking of the big green box.
Yeah, can you suggest any best-known methods for showing return on investment that an obsolescence team returns to its own organization? I found it's difficult to put a dollar value on icebergs avoided.
So can you say that again?
Do you have any best-known methods for showing return on investment that an obsolescence team returns to its own organization?
So it's tough. Really, your best bet is cost avoidance. So calculate what your cost avoidance is for if you do something for obsolescence versus if you had done nothing, and present that to management. And then you can say, okay, here's our labor rate, right? Here's what it's costing you to do this. This is what it costs for your people. This is what it costs for your tools. What would it cost for you to send me all these cool conferences? and it's this much compared to the overall cost avoidance, because the cost avoidance is big. Can't tell you the program, but in 2017, one program, $7 million in a year was avoided for one military program. That's enough to buy another end product in most cases, unless it's something really big.
Pretty good ROI. We got a question over here.
This question is not necessarily for obsolescence, but to the services you provided or providing. I believe you give Rojas, Reach, you know, et cetera, information, conflict minerals, et cetera. Have you seen recently, given the tariffs and IP concerns, country of origin information request?
Yeah, so we've had a lot of action on the tariff side, and we actually have a tariff report and are able to help you look at the parts that have tariffs against them and see if there's alternatives out there that may not have a tariff yet or at all, because it's made someplace that's not going to be on the tariff list. But yeah, we had that as a service we're doing, and we've had many people use it. It's worthwhile.
Okay, I neglected to ask you guys to state your name before you start talking. I think we have one over here, so let us know who you are and where you're from.
Yeah, Dave Granke, Logistics Management Institute. You mentioned a $7 million cost avoidance.
Yep.
I was just curious if there was a standard way you calculated that, or is that something specific to the program? Because I've found it very hard to find procedures for calculating a negative.
Yeah, and it is it's kind of a controversial thing, as you know, because I think, Dave, we've had this discussion before. But the way that I look at true cost avoidance and the way that our cost avoidance calculator works is the cost of the resolution minus the cost of the next viable solution. A lot of times people will go to redesign immediately. So because I did a last time buy, I didn't have to do a redesign. Well, that's not true. Because you did a last time buy, there were other options that you could have done. So yes, so that is a big part of that, and getting the thinking in the right place so you're not overstating or understating, because I've seen it done the other way too. People putting last time buy in their redesign or in their avoidance off of a redesign. Well, if it was a true last time buy, you were going to buy them anyway. So you should not be charging your DMS program to do a last time buy. And if you do take it out of that bucket of money, it should get paid back from production, because you were going to buy them anyway. The costs that should be hitting your DMS program for doing that buy, storage costs, if you had to buy a min buy and it was more than the proposed buy, anything that would not have already been in the plan. We've got to make sure we're talking about cost avoidance like it should be, which is unplanned costs, not already planned costs. So that's one of the big things that is an issue when people don't think about that. Was this already in the plan? Was this not already in the plan? What was my next option versus what's, you know, what I actually did, not just automatically going to, well, redesign's going to cost me $1 million and because I spent $5,000, I'm a hero. No. Not if you had the option of using an alternate part or finding existing stock somewhere or any of the other options in the SD22 guidebook.
Okay, right over here. Tell us who you are.
Roy, IDEX Labs. Yep. There are companies that have more than one obsolescence guy?
There are. Not many, but there are. No, it's, and that's, yeah, it's, I feel your pain. I was working a program where I was the one obsolescence guy, and there were a total of two logistics guys on the whole program. That was a small program, but yeah, we did all the work. But yeah.
I have a follow-up.
Yeah.
So full disclosure,
we do actually have what we call category managers.
Right.
We do all the contract negotiations.
Yep.
And then they have a category manager, which is kind of redundant. That's their boss. But I also work with an SQE, a supplier quality engineer.
Yep.
and he does a lot of the technical intervention between me and the contract manufacturer.
Yeah, they were always involved in all my meetings. Yep, my supply chain guys, my quality guys, involved in all the supplier meetings.
Okay, that's just about all the time we have. Give it up for Vern.
Thank you.